Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Hour number two of your Ben Jarofsky Show is just moments away. Your first Ben Jarofsky Show for the year 2020, by the way.
In the year 2020.
Ah, boy. But before we get into hour number two, we'd like to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 in District 8.
That's correct.
The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, sponsor this program, as well as the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. We thank those unions quite a bit for sponsoring this show and bringing back the Ben Jarofsky Show. And, of course, today's program is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Hour number two, let's go. It is Thursday, January 2nd, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, we're talking with Robin Peterson of the Democratic Socialists of America. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Robin Peterson in the studio. I can't remember who it was that said, "Ben, you got to get Robin Peterson on your show." I can't remember who it was, Robin Peterson.
Boy,
was it Micah?
I don't know.
It would not matter. So I immediately, dutifully, called her up, cut a deal. She's here on the show. She's going to be talking politics. Chicago, co-chair of the Chicago Democratic Socialist. Chicago is sort of like ground zero of the Democratic Socialists. We got, I think, six by my count in Chicago City Council. Did I have that right? Six?
Okay. Yep.
So a lot to talk about politically speaking with Robin. Before we do that, D, you got an update for me?
Yeah, have an update for you here, Ben. First off, it's a 2020 Democratic presidential candidate update. You talked about it briefly with Miles Kampf Lassen. By the way, if you're on the download, go download hour number one if you've yet to, because it's a great interview with Miles Kampf Lassen. All right, former Obama Housing Secretary Julian Castro on Thursday ended his run for president that pushed the 2020 field on immigration and swung hard at rivals on the debate stage, but never found a foothold to climb from the back of the pack. So Julian Castro is out of the race, Ben. Your thoughts?
Well, it was a long shot to begin with, because he didn't have the name recognition of Bernie. He didn't have the money and connections of, let's say, Joe Biden. He was coming at it from the left, as opposed to Pete Buttigieg, who was coming at it from the center, so Pete could get the young centrist vote. Like, just for a thought there, you're young and you're a centrist. I mean, like, when you're young, you should be a socialist when you're young. The old convention is that the older you get, the more conservative you get. I'm just on a tangent here with a tangent. But the older you get, the more conservative you get. So, like, Pete Buttigieg is my issue with Pete. He's already a centrist. Good God. What's he going to do? Turn into a right winger by the time he's 70? Anyway, as soon as I say this, I realize that most of Pete Buttigieg, or many of Pete Buttigieg's supporters, are of the older persuasion. So maybe he's onto something appealing to old people. Anyway, Castro was never able to get a foothold in it. I appreciate him tremendously. We've talked about every single debate. After every show, we break down the debate with Letitia Wallace, Amina Mustafa. And I appreciate Castro from the first debate. He was the one, if you can go back in time, what was it? June D? I can't remember. I've lost track of time.
Oh, boy. Really? Can't remember.
Yeah. June or July or August. That's all a blur. The summer was a blur. But that first Democratic debate, he was the one who raised the issue about the intricacies of immigration law. There was a provision in the code that made it illegal and treated it as a crime for somebody to come across the border. And he took the stand that we should abolish that provision from the law, so it was no longer criminally treated for somebody to be an immigrant to this country, a quote-unquote illegal immigrant. And I appreciated him because as a kind of guy like takes the deep dive in Chicago politics, I appreciated a candidate who was willing to take a deep dive into sort of like the labyrinth of laws that govern something as complicated and as easily to distort and demagogue as immigration. Talking about a specific law. He drew attention to a very specific law. And then, of course, it went nowhere. I guess it's a sure sign that a campaign's not going to go anywhere if I'm the one singing the praise of the campaign. You need money, folks, to run in this country. I guess that's obvious.
Well, Castro is out of the race. Ben said he needs money. Well, this following candidate here has quite a bit of money. Andrew Yang has raised $16.5 million in the last 3 months. Donations to Yang in the fourth quarter of 2019 were his highest in any such period, and this puts him among the top fundraisers in the Democratic presidential field. Come from behind here, this Andrew Yang.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a difference. Andrew Yang and Castro, and I follow both of these campaigns. Castro was a conventional politician. This is not his first run for office. He held office before. He was working within the parameters of conventional Democratic politics, more or less. He was more on the left side of it. So just think about that. And then he was just one of many in that category. I'm thinking Andrew Yang is unconventional Democratic candidate. He's never run for any other office. He's running his first time out of the box. He's running for president of the United States. And he's doing it presenting himself
without a tie.
Without a tie. Is that like, whoa? You're like, so anybody who hates ties is already like, you know, vibing on them. And I don't like ties either. So that was like, and they had the button that said math. And he was, so he had a quirky sense of humor. You know, you could argue that Castro was more embedded with reality of what people are facing. But maybe there's a segment of the Democratic Party or in politics in general that wants something that's just new and different. And so Yang is sort of represents that. Robin, your thoughts on all this?
I think he's getting some of the techies. My brother's one of those people, so.
Your brother's a techie?
Yeah.
And he's for Yang?
He's not for Yang. He's for Bernie. But he's talking about automation and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, and so that's something else about Andrew Yang that I appreciate. The tie was one. The math button was two. The sense of humor was three. But he was also talking about the impact. And this is, I think, his greatest contribution. I talked about Castro's greatest contribution was the discussion of immigration. Yang's discussion, the impact that automation will have on the workforce and the fact of the matter that so many people proclaim it is a great advance when we can eliminate jobs due to computer technology. The reality is that has a devastating impact on the people who have the jobs that are being eliminated. At least Andrew Yang is discussing that. So anyway, I don't know if the people giving him all that money, though, are doing it because of the tie, the math button, the quirky sense of humor, or his discussion of automation and the impact it's having on the economy.
$1,000 a month, man.
Yeah. Let's not forget.
Come on.
$1,000 a month. Yeah. So
those are the updates. We'll keep you posted on any 2020 Democratic presidential candidate updates or anything locally as today's program rolls along.
All right. Very good. Robin Peterson, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And you're the co-chair of the Chicago Democratic Socialists. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to this position. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself. It's your first time on our show. So introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah. I'm one of those folks who graduated college during the Great Recession and was politicized by material conditions of not all myself and a lot of my friends had a hard time finding being employed. And then my first job was working at a school. And that was the year the teachers went on strike and then ROM closed 50 schools. And the school I worked at happened to be one of those. So I think my personal story is a lot like a lot of other millennials, where we just saw after kind of feeling being kids and thinking, well, maybe the system will take care of us, seeing, no, it's definitely not going to do that. It's not going to be there for us. And it doesn't work for us at all. It works, but not for us. So I think it was a combination of that and then very directly seeing during the teacher strike, the power of workers going on strike, and then the way Rahm was closing these schools that really communities relied on as a way of dismantling those communities. And that's kind of how I got into organizing, was by working with the parents at the school to try to keep that school open. But at that time, there wasn't a pre-existing organization. So unfortunately, that school, Bethune, was closed.
Mm. And so were you, who was the first politician that inspired you? Or was there a politician that inspired you?
Well, Bernie was inspiring. I wasn't deeply involved at that point, but I did phone bank for Bernie during his last run.
Not Barack Obama.
Also, Obama, I didn't volunteer for Obama. Actually, going back, I volunteered for John Kerry when I was in ninth grade.
First politician that inspired you was John Kerry. So you're kind of going in reverse. I remember I said most people start out young, they're socialist, they're idealist, and then they work their way to the John Kerry type politicians. Right off the bat, you were like, I like John Kerry. Now, what was it about John Kerry that inspired ninth grade Robin Peterson?
Well, in eighth grade, we went to war with Iraq, and I was against that. And so Kerry seemed like an alternative to Bush.
He was an alternative to Bush. But think about your generation, Robin, just for a moment. Your generation came of age. I always talk about this. Stop it in your life. I've been telling kids about stuff that went down in the 70s. It happened when I was alive. I think about what stuff that's happened while you were alive in this century alone. And it kind of gets, it really is getting lost. Although the articles in the front page of the papers are saying a pro-Iran clash, a U.S. embassy ends in Baghdad. The United States invaded Iraq in 2003. Here we are 17 years later. Our troops are still in Iraq. There's talk about sending more in there because of the instability in the country. That is an obvious remnant of the invasion. This is sort of the background that your generation came of age in.
That's right.
And so what's the takeaway that you have from that?
I think a lot of other members of DSA have gone through the same sort of, well, there were huge protests against the Iraq war, and then we still went to war, and people were disillusioned. But then when Bernie ran on a platform where he was demanding the things people actually need and talking in a different way about politics, presenting a real vision that's an alternative to something like Trump's vision, that's when people got reactivated. People who had previously been on the liberal left side, who heard his message and that resonated with them. So a lot of that has, I think, gone into DSA.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we get into a little more specific about DSA, I just want to take people back to 2003. When the United States announced the war, the invasion of Iraq, there was massive protests in Chicago, in the streets of Chicago, and protesters actually went over in Lakeshore Drive, shut down Lakeshore Drive. This is the ancient history, 2003, I remember it. Mayor Daley at the time, his police, the mass arrests of those protesters, hundreds and hundreds of people thrown into jail. When the protesters came off of Lakeshore Drive, they were basically surrounded right around the water tower place and just thrown into police vans and taken off to jail, hauled off to jail. And it had a very chilling effect, in my humble opinion, on mass protests in the city of Chicago. It was Mayor Daley's way of saying, you're not going to do this again. You're not going to embarrass my city. And people will talk about Mayor Daley's connections to George Bush and the White House. They were very strong. They're very deep. When George Bush wanted to celebrate his 60th birthday, he came to the city of Chicago not long after this, Robin, and celebrated with Mayor Daley at a restaurant in the South Loop. So this is stuff that happened in in the lifetime of millennials and the impact. This is the coalition, if you will, of Democrats and Republicans and the reaction they had to protesters of the war. I'd just like to take that moment to give that little history lesson there. All right. Why a Democratic Socialist? Why aren't you not just a conventional Democrat?
There are a few things. The biggest one is that we view there being a fundamental conflict between the working class and bosses, landlords, the ruling class and the political elite in Chicago. So socialist to me acknowledges that there's this conflict in society and that what we need is a mass working class democratic movement to win control over workers' lives for workers.
And you don't see that coming from the Democratic Party?
No. I come from a family that's very involved in the Democratic Party. And I think, like, a lot of people identify strongly with it just because Republicans are so bad. But the Democratic Party isn't an organization that's run democratically. And being a member, you're not really a member even. You don't pay dues. You don't have democratic say over it. All you do is vote in elections, which aren't Democratic Party elections. So so I think, for instance, the organization we're trying to build, DSA, is totally different.
So give me some of the examples of how the DSA is different than the Democratic Party.
Well, the Democratic Party is a party of the 1% and corporations and the capitalist class. It doesn't serve the interests of working class people. I think Chicago is a place where we see that all the time. It might be different in Kansas, where some of my family's from, where the Democratic Party is the minority, but here in Illinois and Chicago, where the Democratic Party pretty much runs the city and state, we can see that it's still not run in the interests of working class people. Rahm Emanuel closing 50 schools, giving away money to corporation, TIF money. These are kind of the kind of things that a party that served the interests of workers would not do.
And so what are some specific issues that you want to champion in the coming years, in the coming year as Democratic Socialists?
Yeah, so maybe I should give a little more background about what we did in the past year.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so we our goal is to build a mass working class movement in Chicago. And to do that, one thing we do is we run issue-based campaigns for things like Medicare for All, lift the ban on rent control, and we also have a campaign called Democratize ComEd to take public control of our electrical utility, which I can get into more later. Mm-hmm. And another thing we do is we help elect socialists to office. So in the past municipal election, 6 socialists were elected. And currently we're going all in for the Bernie Sanders campaign because we are seeing that this is a time when people are being newly politicized, just like in 2016. So we want to reach those people who are hearing Bernie's message and talk to them about socialism and DSA.
All right. Let's break them down. Rent control. Talk about that particular fight.
Yeah. So that's the one I know the most about. I got involved in rent control in the fall of 2017. This is a fight for people to be able to stay in their homes and their communities. And we know that in Chicago, it's no secret, it's getting harder to live here, harder to afford the city. Lots of people are leaving, and especially people of color, working class people are leaving, and neighborhoods are getting richer and whiter. So rent control is a way to put the brakes on the gentrification and displacement that's rampant in so many neighborhoods in the city right now. And it's the only tool that would have that rapid effect. We also want to build more affordable housing, but we're demanding rent control so that in a neighborhood like Pilsen or Woodlawn, where developers are snatching up buildings and speculating all over the place, that the people who've lived there for generations can stay there.
How would rent control work?
Rent control would control the percentage that your rent could increase each month. So right now your landlord can raise your rent as much as they want each year or each month if you don't have a lease. So under rent control, you'd know your rent would only go up like 2 or 3% a month, a year.
And so that would be instituted in law. There'd be a cap in law that would protect from rises beyond 2 or 3%.
Right. So usually it's done differently in different places. But what we're demanding is that basically it's the same percentage as the consumer price index. So we know that things get more expensive through inflation, but we don't think rent should go up more than that.
And so who's championing this in the state of Illinois? Who are some of the politicians that are leading this charge?
So the campaign was started by four community organizations: the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, Pilsen Alliance, the Lugenia Burns Hope Center, and Northside Action for Justice. And Chicago DSA joined the leadership in the spring of 2018. And Will Gazzardi has been the sponsor. Delia Ramirez is also a supporter. And let's see, Robert Peters, state senator.
And so is it already developing opposition, a blowback to it?
Yeah. So if we think about the way the housing system works now, mm-hmm. it's on the very close level. It's your landlord is making a profit off you paying rent. And then if you zoom out a little bit, and huge developers with cash are buying up neighborhoods, some of them just to flip them and making, it's all about profit. But we think it should be about people's needs. So the people who are making a profit off of housing are not surprisingly in opposition. So the Illinois realtors that have been in opposition to us. But what we see is that people are, when they hear about our demand for rent control and they learn what it is, they want rent control. We've had referendums in wards across the city, and it's always passed by about 75%. So 75%.
There's another argument that's raised. I've seen this from editorial pages, that if you have rent control, that'll stifle development in the city of Chicago, that'll stifle investment in the city of Chicago, that will prevent Chicago from growing at the rate that we, the people who write these editorials, want it to grow at. It's anti-market, it's anti-capitalist, it works against the long-term interests of the city of Chicago. What's your response to that?
Well, it depends on what you mean by the interests of the city of Chicago. If you're talking about working class people's interests, then rent control is absolutely in their interest. We're seeing 5 years of Illinois and Chicago losing population growth, like one of the highest rates in the nation. People are leaving because they can't afford the rent, and that's bad for the city. I think that it makes for a more vibrant city, a better city, if people have strong communities that they know they're going to be able to continue to live in and build together.
One of the great questions is why people are leaving Illinois. I think there was just an article in the paper 2 or 3 days ago. Don't quote me on that, but it was very relatively recent. Latest census studies show that Illinois' population has fell this year as a trend that's continued for the last decade, and that Illinois, I believe, has lost more people than any other state in the union over the last decade. It's only one of three that's lost. I'm doing this off the top of my head, Robin, but essentially that's the point. That's the drift. And people draw different conclusions. I have conclusions that I draw from this, which I will refrain from saying now. The Chicago Tribune, the editorial board, draws conclusions that are much different than mine. Their conclusion is that we have taxes are too high in the state of Illinois, and that's why people are leaving. And if we lower taxes in Illinois, we'll make it more like Wisconsin and Indiana, which is like paradises for the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and that people will stop leaving Illinois and come back to Illinois. So what's your reaction to that?
Well, once again, it's a question about who's paying the taxes. And I think that we need to see the rich paying more taxes. This is something that has been an important push on the part of the socialists and city council, as well as the progressives who are newly elected, to have a budget that taxes the rich to fund the social, the public services and goods that we need, the schools, affordable housing. We need to tax the rich to have those things. And I think those are important things to keep people in the city too. If your neighborhood school is closed, are you going to be able to stay in the city? Probably not.
So you're not afraid that if you tax the rich too much, the rich people will all move to Gary, Indiana?
No.
Okay, you're not afraid of that as a consequence.
Well, I think that what we need to do is build a movement strong enough to keep them here. The wealth belongs to the people who created it, and that's the workers in Chicago.
All right, let's talk about helping elect more socialists to office. It was a pretty good year, at least in the local elections for you. You said six aldermen. I can do it off the top of my head. I can name them all, but why don't you name them for us so I don't blow it and leave a name off?
Yeah, so Carlos Rosa, Daniel Espada. Carlos Rosa, 35th Ward, Daniel Espada in the 1st, Rosana Rodriguez in the 33rd, Andre Vasquez in the 40th, Byron Sichel Lopez in the 25th, and Jeanette Taylor in the 20th Ward, which was the campaign I worked on this past winter as field director.
Oh, you were, maybe that's who recommended you, Jeanette Taylor. I remember I was like, remember recommending you. Jeanette Taylor comes on the show, one of our favorite guests on the show. Now that's ground zero of this this sort of conflict, if you will, Robin, because that's where the Obama Center is, the general area where the Obama Center is coming. Rents are going up all throughout that area. And the Obama Center somehow become a very symbolic a struggle on this issue of affordability versus development. And Jeanette is at the heart of that. She's going to figure that one out.
That's right. There's millions of dollars coming. Public dollars, tax dollars going towards that. Also lots of private investment. And a neighborhood like Woodlawn needs investment, but the people who live there deserve to decide how that investment works and where it goes and who it benefits. It needs to benefit the people who live there now.
So what impact do you think the six socialist, Democratic socialists in the city council have had on politics already in terms of the latest budget debate, et cetera?
Yeah, so one thing about them is that they ran on movements, grassroots movements like rent control for affordable housing, for fully funded public schools, and those demands got them elected. So now what we're seeing is that they're able to continue to build those movements from their offices. So within city council, in the budget, which is an important fight spearheaded by groups like United Working Families and Grassroots Collaborative, they've been able to say to vote against the budget and actually make that a contentious vote. Saying that, again, that we should be taxing the rich in order to invest in things like public mental health clinics. They stood up to Lightfoot on that appointment of the mental health department director who would not have reopened those closed mental health clinics. They've spoken out in support of the Chicago Teachers Union and Local 73 when they went on strike. So they've been able to use their platform to articulate this left pole and a different vision of how this city could work.
All right, very good. That's what went down this year. We're going to take a break, come back. We'll close down by asking Robin what she expects from Democratic Socialists in the year to come. We'll be right back.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Hey, everybody, what you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffemanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent, and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you, people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
Welcome back to the first Ben Jarofsky show of the year 2020.
Man, 2020.
Ben Jarofsky, take us home.
We'll do Robin Peterson in the studio. We're going to ask her to take a look at her crystal ball, make some thoughts, some predictions of what's ahead, political struggles ahead, and yeah, maybe see what she thinks about Bernie Sanders' campaign, et cetera, and so forth. But before we do that, D, got an update for me?
Absolutely, I do. I believe our good friend on the YouTube live stream chat one, Johnny Joe.
Johnny Joe.
As weighing in, he has his crystal ball out as well. Had a quick question for you, Ben. I gotta scroll through it.
Trivia question?
No, not a trivia.
What was I doing in the year 1977?
You wish. All right. Johnny Joe says, Dr. D, ask Ben if he's still planning to vote for Joe Biden. He loves Joe Biden, guys.
Okay.
Still not sure why.
Okay, all right. Okay, taking a lot of heat on this one. I was never planning to vote for Joe Biden, all right? I would say, Castro's out of the race, so I have to reconfigure. If I had to rank my candidates, Democratic candidate, I am going to vote for whoever the Democrat nominee is. Now, I don't know if Robin's in the same boat.
I believe
vote.
They call that vote blue no matter who.
Yes. That's one way of saying it. Among the candidates now, I will vote for whoever is the nominee against Donald John Trump. No way. I'm going to sit that one out.
Okay. So all right. Johnny Joe's question, though, is because he's got his crystal ball out. And he believes that Joe Biden will choose Lindsey Graham as his running mate. And he says, would you still vote for Joe Biden if he chooses Lindsey Graham as his running mate?
Oh, my God. That's a tough one. Wow. If Joe Biden is so dumb as to choose Lindsey Graham as his running mate, that would put me in a position where voting for Joe Biden would mean that Lindsey would be the president of the United States. God forbid if something happened to Joe Biden. Who is the one who asked this question?
This is Johnny Joe. I think Johnny Joe got his hand on some of that legal reefer.
I was like, man, Johnny Joe, I got to tell you right now, I don't think that's going to happen. But wait, I got to do my rank. Yeah, he's not going to pick Lindsey Graham, but it's a great question. That got Ben in a corner. And you know what my response was? Habada.
Yeah,
I don't really know how to answer that question, Johnny Joe.
Johnny Joe may be a little stoned.
I got
to
tell you,
today.
Man, Johnny Joe sounds like someone in my family. Hey, Ben, you love Biden so much. How about this? What if Joe Biden picks
picks Lindsey Graham as his running mate. What are you going to do then, Ben?
We've been talking about money all throughout the show today.
Money.
Yeah, I don't have none, but we got stories about it. Nearly $3.2 million of marijuana products were sold in Illinois dispensaries on the first day of legal weed sales. We talked about that. And earlier we mentioned that one Andrew Yang Andrew Yang has raised $16.5 million in the last 3 months, according to his campaign, the fourth quarter of 2019, where it is the highest that he's had in any such period. And, well, we have some more fourth quarter numbers here. President Trump, the Trump campaign says that it has raised $46 million in the fourth quarter.
That's some frightening stuff.
$16 million from Yang really doesn't look like much after that. $46 million from the Trump campaign in the fourth quarter, dwarfing Democrats' hauls.
Absolutely. And what he's doing is spending that money just bombarding people with internet advertisements, just promoting all kinds of vile stuff, trying to beam it into their heads, scare swing voters and Democrats into voting for him, using their fears of immigrants, people who look differently than them, to get them to vote for them, trying to mock and malign serious issues like climate change. We talked about that with Miles Robin. It's a very, very important, serious issue, obviously, duh. And yet Donald Trump is trying to trivialize and say it doesn't matter. It's a made-up hoax.
No, that's collusion.
Thank you, Donald Trump. Yeah. So that's exactly what he's using that money for. And it's very tough. Money talks. Money controls politics. I hate to say it. And you could use that money to brainwash people. See it happen all the time. Dee, I just did a really quick survey. I don't know. I can't remember who is in and out of the race right now because so many people have been dropping out. But right now, my list would be just for Johnny Joe. Joe Biden is not my favorite in the race. I think right now Joey's fifth. In the race, Bernie.
He's the fifth today for Ben.
Yes, today.
Tomorrow, he could be first.
No, he's not going to be first. He will not be third come tomorrow. Bernie, Warren, Yang, Amy Klobuchar, Joe Biden. Of the people who are still in the race right now, I'm trying to think. Buttigieg is still in the race. Let's see who else is still in there. Cory Booker. Cory Booker in those charter schools. That's where he lost me. He was just like such a big supporter of charter school. What's your list, Robin Peterson? Do you have any number other than one?
Bernie, and Bernie.
Okay.
That's correct.
Robin Peterson.
Yeah. That's cool.
Elizabeth Warren's not on the list at all.
I'll vote for her if she's the nominee. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, I urge you to show up at the Hideout first Tuesday in February and hear the great debate. Carlos Ramirez Rosa, a Democratic Socialist.
That's right.
Alderman of the 35th Ward from Logan Square. We'll be debating Brandon Johnson from the Chicago Teachers Union, Cook County Commissioner. Brandon will be supporting Elizabeth Warren. And Carlos will be supporting Bernie, so it should be an interesting debate. Maybe Brandon can convince you that there's more merit to Elizabeth Warren than right now you believe in. All right, your crystal ball. What do you foresee in the year 2020?
So one thing I was thinking about today is what former alderman of the 40th Ward, Pat O'Connor, said last August, which was that who would ever think that you could run on being a Democratic Socialist and that would be a good thing. And now he's no longer the alderman. There's a Democratic Socialist who's replaced him. So my prediction is that in the next year, we're going to see a continued growth of Democratic Socialism as a movement. And a lot of that will come from Bernie supporters.
Do you believe Bernie Sanders will be the nominee?
Yeah, I do. I hope he is because I think he's the one who can defeat Trump because he's activating people who aren't frequent voters, young people, people of color. These are the people we need to get to the polls. We need new people to vote. And we need youth and people of color. We need people becoming newly politicized and joining a movement, both to elect Bernie, to defeat Trump, and to win the things Bernie's running on.
All right, now, Robin Peterson, before we let you out the door, if folks want to learn more about the Democratic Socialists, if they want to join your campaign for rent control or any of these things, Democratize ComEd, how do they get in touch with you?
You can visit our website, chicagodsa.org. And if you want to see our events, chicagodsa.org/events. And I'd encourage everyone who, all those Bernie supporters who are listening, to come canvass with us this Saturday from 10 to 2. We've got three different locations, the Daly Branch Library in Bridgeport, the Bazazian Branch in Uptown, and the North Pulaski Branch. So 10 a.m. this Saturday, come out.
All right, very good. Robin Peterson, thank you so much for stopping by. I also want to thank Miles Kampf-Lassen from In These Times. Every Thursday, he comes on the show. It's a delight talking politics with him. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend.
Wait, hold on. Jay Marie on the YouTube live stream chat brought something up, and I'm glad she did.
Okay.
I thought Ben loved Marianne Williamson. What happened to her?
Wait, where's my butt?
You did love Marianne Williamson.
Where's my butt?
I put all your crap down here on the floor.
Oh, okay. I had a Marianne Williamson button. This is my favorite button, by the way.
Oh, that's her. There it is. Oh, no, that's the Bernie button. There you go.
The Bernie reefer button. You know, I had flirted with a lot of them. Remember when I was drinking the Kamala Kool-Aid?
Yeah.
People forget that.
Well, you still do every now and again.
Every now and then. Kamala, you know, I would really appreciate it. Kamala Harris for the attack on Joe Biden in the first debate. I don't know if you remember that, Robin, where she talked about busing and and Joe Biden's past, where he was an ally of some of like the Strom Thurmonds of the world.
I believe there was a point where you had some Tulsi Kool-Aid as well, wasn't there?
You know, Tulsi, I never really drenched myself in the Tulsi Kool-Aid. I flirted with it, and then Ramana Hussein and Samina Mustafa really set me straight on Tulsi. I like Tulsi. Again, okay, Tulsi's, I think about the Tulsi's confrontation with Pete Buttigieg in the debate where they were talking about foreign policy and intervention in other countries. I don't know if you remember this, Robin, where she chastised him for suggesting that the United States invade Mexico. He said she was distorting his position and exaggerating it. But it was an interesting moment in the I've always had my issues with Tulsi. I'll be honest with you, Dee. Where she lost me was on the vote for impeachment, where she voted present. And I'm like, come on, Tulsi, you know, you just vote no. If you don't think they have a case against Donald John Trump, vote no. Nobody's fooled with the present vote.
Well, Ben,
anyway, I was never really drenched in the Tulsi Kool-Aid.
Sad news here. We got updates as soon as we mentioned Marianne Williamson from both Pat Whalen and Frank. Frank and Pat, what's happening? Marianne Williamson, it says here, lays off her entire campaign staff. So looks like we're preparing for
Marianne Williamson
to drop out.
Yeah, I can't say I'm really surprised by that, Dee. Remember we interviewed Marianne Williamson here about a couple months ago. So Marianne Williamson's great contribution, I'll give her credit, was on which debate was that? She talked reparations. I thought that was a great contribution she made, and of course was immediately forgotten as the race went on. So anyway, yeah, I'm not really drenching myself in the Marion. I was more of a Kamala Kool-Aid person. Let's get it straight.
All right. So there you go, everybody. That update brought to you by Kool-Aid.
All right. Where was I? Oh, yes.
We're finishing the show.
I was thanking Miles. And of course, I want to thank the man, the myth, the legend. Back home in Alton, Illinois, Robin, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
No one calls me that. And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Benny J bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. The top five Chicago and or Illinois stories of 2019 are posted. Go find out what those top five stories are and download that. And downloaders, you know we live stream this program. It's true. Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. Shout out to everyone on the YouTube live stream chat going back and forth, having a good time, even you, PC Amnesty. Take care, everybody.